The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to the How to Kill an Hour Hour, the half-hour edition brought to you by Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care. And now, without further ado, here's your host for the next 30 minutes, the one, the only, the Ed Man.
Oh, yeah, welcome. Oh, I got the coronavirus. Welcome once again to the How to Kill an Hour radio show. I'm your host, the man with a plan, the Ed Man, here to give you some of the news for the past week. Guys, why don't we talk about the delegate count first before we get to the coronavirus stuff? And hopefully we will not make it that far, because I know you've heard it everywhere else and you're probably sick of hearing about it just like I am. You know, I can't even take a dump now because I have no toilet paper. But now's a great time to get a bidet. They're having some great deals on them. The only problem is that they're coming in from Italy, so you don't really, you know, you want to double disinfect that package there. Everyone's panicking. There's no food. There's no water. You know, I wonder if more people are going to expire as a result of the preparation than the actual virus. Trump came out yesterday, declared a national state of emergency. I think he's responded pretty quickly to this stuff, probably because of all the criticism that people have. You know, if he declared a state of emergency early, people are going to say, oh, he's throwing the nation into a panic. If he declares it late, they'll say that he wasn't on it. And damn it, you guys got me talking about this thing. See, I told you I didn't want to talk about it, and now I'm talking about it, and I blame you. Well, since I'm already on the subject, maybe I can hit it from an angle that others have not really talked about, so I'll make this worth your while. All right, let's talk about this story that I have found here. This is from Reuters, and, well, you know what? Let's do this one first, and then I'm going to go to the Reuters story. So this was published one day ago. This is by Barnini Chakraborty from Fox News. China hints at denying Americans life-saving coronavirus drugs. Life-saving. China hints, is the headline, at denying Americans life-saving coronavirus drugs. Now, how is that possible? Well, before I get into the story, let me tell you about a video that I saw about how the virus is going to be combated. We're going to come out with a vaccine. Now, typically, I believe a vaccine takes about 18 months to come to sale for the public. And in the story that I saw, the man was explaining that typically they go through animal testing, and then they go to testing on humans. But in this case, they're going to be doing testing on animals and humans simultaneously. So in other words, they're doing human testing is what's happening. Well, from what I remember him saying, the majority of this testing and manufacture is being done in China. And so that means that we're dependent on China for, you know, a lot of the cure. Or, well, I guess it's not a cure, but the immunization, which will result in this virus dwindling down to having a much smaller effect. So why am I talking about this? Because I want to bring up this other story now back into the mix here. All right, so going back to the headline, China hints at denying Americans life-saving coronavirus drugs. Now that the number of new people infected with a coronavirus in China is slowing down, the country's Communist Party is ratcheting up threats against the West with a particularly nasty warning about access to life-saving drugs aimed at the United States. In an article in Xinhua, the state-run media agency that's largely considered the mouthpiece of the party, Beijing bragged about its handling of the COVID-19, which is the name of the coronavirus, a virus that originated in the city of Wuhan and spread quickly around the world, killing nearly 5,000 and infecting thousands more. The article also claimed that China could impose pharmaceutical export controls, which would plunge America into the mighty seas of coronavirus. Is that an idiom for China? So the disturbing threats made during a global pandemic, as well as scary consequences if that threat becomes real, highlight just how tight China's grip is on the global supply chain. I don't think that this is something that we should be worried about for this specific situation, for the coronavirus. But the fact that that state-run newspaper would say that, that they would think about that, imagine if this was worse. If this coronavirus was something that was wiping out humans at a much higher degree, then we would be at their mercy. And this is why it's so important that we have manufacturing here in this country, and the reason why we have dependence on ourselves and not on others to do the manufacturing for us. And, you know, people might say, well, these companies are selfish and greedy and they're going overseas and that's the reason. That's not the problem. The companies are trying to remain viable in business. The problem is that we do not understand in this country how to make things work economically. And if you keep pushing things up the way that Bernie Sanders and all the Democrats do and many Republicans, by driving up the prices and making it more expensive to manufacture things with minimum wage hikes and regulations and things that make it harder for businesses to compete with each other, then there's no way that they're going to be able to stay in this country. And it doesn't matter if Trump says, well, then we're going to tax you if you leave this country. I mean, that might help them stay here a little bit, but I don't know how that's going to help us compete with a company like China, a nation like China. Or any other nation. And that's how I knew that NAFTA was going to be terrible, you know, even way back then. And the reason is because these countries don't have the same burdens and limitations on companies that we do here. Now, I do think some regulation is good. You know, I took a test recently. I'm actually center left on the political spectrum. My girlfriend heard me say that. She says I must have taken the test wrong. I must have done something wrong, she said. No, I think I'm a lot more liberal in my beliefs than people think. I mean, I do believe that we should help people who are in trouble. And I do think that we shouldn't let companies get away with, you know, insane policies that like dumping, you know, chemicals in the water and stuff like that. But the way that I want to go about curtailing that is different than I think that most leftists want to take care of it. And they want to do it through pure government regulation. And I mean, I think it doesn't take a whole lot of research to prove over and over again that that doesn't work. What it ends up doing is that these companies with a lot of money can still cheat. And it stops them from having competition because it keeps smaller industries and people who don't have as much money from starting new businesses and then competing against them so that they behave better. Now, continuing with this idea of the threat of China withholding medicine from the U.S., I've got another story here which somewhat kind of, if you were on the side of the Chinese communist government, would bolster your argument. And this is from Reuters. So this is a story I was going to say before by Gabriel Crossley, Beijing, March 12th. So this is earlier than the previous story. A spokesman for China's foreign ministry suggested on Thursday the U.S. military might have brought the coronavirus to the Chinese city of Wuhan, which has been hardest hit by the outbreak, doubling down on a war of words with Washington. China has taken great offense at comments by U.S. officials, accusing it of being slow to react to the virus first detected in Wuhan late last year and of not being transparent enough. And in a strongly worded tweet written in English on his verified Twitter account, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian said it was the United States that lacked transparency. When did patient zero begin in U.S.? This is the tweet. How many people are infected? What are the names of the hospitals? It might be U.S. Army who brought the epidemic to Wuhan. Be transparent. Make public your data. U.S. owe us an explanation. That sounds like one of those phony Amazon reviews. But you hear that language. That is setting up the groundwork for them to be justified in their actions against the U.S. If they withhold medicine that we need, they're saying, they're creating a justification for it. Without delving into the conspiracy of the accusation, if they're laying the groundwork for reasons to act against us, we need to be very concerned about that. And it shows that Trump is right with his America First policy. You know, I want all nations to get along, okay? I want us to be a global community. But man is a territorial creature. We divide ourselves up into groups by nature. And I think that that is something that we should fight. But it's our culture that we have in the United States that I think is kind of, and I could be wrong about this, I mean, but despite what the leftists think, I think it's American ideals that sort of lead the way to say that we welcome people from all nations into this country and that we don't care what you look like. Having said that, other cultures aren't so benign, in my opinion. And even though we should keep the ideals that we have, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't protect ourselves against possible aggression, or I don't know what you would call this. This would be aggression by way of withholding, the normal flow of commerce from us. So I don't know if you would call that aggression, but it's not nice. And we have enough resources in the form of natural resources and manpower in this country that we shouldn't be dependent on any other country for livelihood or protection. And in order to do that, we have to have an understanding of why are companies moving overseas? Why is manufacturing so much cheaper in China? And yeah, I understand that they cheat in some ways, as Trump would say, because they don't have laws against intellectual property and things like that. But in another way, that's a detriment to them, because who's going to want to invent something there where somebody else is just going to steal it out from under you? That's one of the strong points of the United States. And if it's not, or something that we think is a strong point when it comes to global competition turns out to be a weakness, maybe we have to reevaluate it. But when you have, let's start with this, okay? Not even looking at the leftists and the, you know, terrible things that their ideas and policies do and would do to the country. But looking at just military spending and the amount of waste that we have, that would save us a lot of money. And this is one of the reasons why I like Tulsi Gabbard, even though I disagree with pretty much everything else that she's got to say. Even more important probably than that concern is why does inflation keep going up? We have to look at this problem. Now, you know, it's always been practically common knowledge that inflation is bad. But now the U.S. policy is that we want 2% inflation. And if you question as to why that is, you get jumped on. Why do we want 2% inflation? If you are producing something, heck, anything that you're doing, any skill that you're learning, as you get better at it, it takes you less time to accomplish the thing that you're trying to do or produce or accomplish, because you get better at it the more that you do it. I think it was Adam Smith that used the analogy of nails. If you're creating nails and you get better at manufacturing nails, then the price of nails should go down because it takes you less time and manpower and effort to manufacture them. And I understand, I'm talking about the average expenses for a family in the United States or anybody here in the United States. I'm not talking about the exceptions. I'm talking about the general overall track of prices here is to go up and up and up and up more, I think, than 2%, probably, if you really looked at everything, not just what the United States looks at in their basket of products for inflation. And because it's hard to look at any single product, it's also easy to hide the effects of inflation. But think of this. My grandfather said that when he was a kid, if you had a dime, you could go into a store and buy the whole store. That's definitely not the case today. And until we get people curious as to the reason why that is, we're not going to make significant headway in this country towards improving our situation, in my opinion. Now, going back to the situation here in the U.S., I think we're going to kick this thing's butt. Because from my understanding, it's definitely deadly to a segment of the population, but it's not that deadly. But I feel like our reaction to this is far higher than it has been to other more deadly viruses. Of course, that's one of the problems with the virus not being deadly, is that it doesn't, you know, we tend to not take it as seriously. And then it infects more people than it would have if it was deadly. And therefore, more people net end up dying as a result. But, you know, if Apple is closing its stores for a couple of weeks, so many events have been canceled. Everyone's avoiding mass gatherings. I mean, practically everyone, right? And we're treating this, I think, pretty effectively. I understand testing centers are going to be going up pretty soon. And I suspect that when we see that a lot more people are infected than we thought, and that the mortality rates of this are lower than we thought, I think the panic's going to sort of die down also. And, you know, I would hate to speak too soon about this stuff because, look, the results are still coming out with this virus. It's still new. But I am happy with the precautions that we've been taking. Or Disney is shut down. So, you know, a lot of venues have voluntarily or involuntarily, because people just haven't been going out and places aren't making money right now, so they're shutting down because it's costing them more to be open. But I feel like our reaction to this is much stronger than it's been to anything that I can remember. And, you know, I remember the AIDS crisis. Now, of course, that was, you know, a little bit of a different situation, but you get what I'm saying. We've been very careful with this one. I think we have been anyway. And yes, I realize this one's a little bit different. You know, the incubation period is longer. Like I said, we're still finding out stuff about this one, and I'd hate to speak too soon. But, you know, I'm starting to see headlines that are saying things like, even if the coronavirus goes away soon, it'll be back. And when the press starts kind of giving up this is an immediate emergency story and says that it'll come back, even if it goes away now, I get the feeling that they believe that this isn't going to be a thing for that much longer, which would be fantastic. And look, if you're a doctor or a listener or anybody and you want to talk to me and tell me off base or on base or whatever, please send me an email at edman@mail.com, mail.com, edman@mail.com. Okay, so let's talk about the effect that it's going to have here on the election. This is very amusing to me. So talking about the election first. What's been going on. The propaganda has worked, okay? And Bernie Sanders, in from what I believe, is effectively out of the race here. And the reason isn't because of the delegate count. Sanders is not actually that far behind in the delegate count. But what's happened is that all these progressives have lost heart, and they are talking like it is over. And therefore, it is over, because they're going to stay home. They're already dragging their feet and saying, oh, we can't win. It was rigged from the beginning. Man, that is a shame. I mean, I'm happy. I want Sanders as far away from that, from the White House as possible. But from the point of view of the human condition, to see people who are so passionate about a cause turn around and get disheartened so quickly and so easily that they've lost all fight is unbelievable to me. So, you know, when Sanders won, they tried to cheat him when he won in Iowa. And, you know, he actually lost a delegate count in Iowa, despite having more votes. The DNC screwed him, and he ended up with less delegates than Pete Buttigieg, who isn't even in the race right now. Joe Biden in that contest came in fourth. I think it was fourth there, or maybe it was the next one that he came in fourth. But the point is that there was a good chance of Sanders winning. And then the DNC, now this is rumor, this is not fact, but I'm saying it's not fact, but in my opinion, it's pretty obvious that this is what's happening. The DNC got everyone together and they said, you guys need to drop out because Sanders is going to beat all of you if you are not united. And they got behind Joe Biden. And everyone dropped out except for Elizabeth Warren, who admitted, essentially her campaign admitted, that they're there to stop Sanders. And so Sanders' vote gets split between Warren and himself. Meanwhile, Biden sails on through. And yet, even though Sanders is only behind by about 100, over 100 delegates. Well, if you go online, all of the progressives are pretty much done. Some of them are sticking out. Some of them are saying, well, you know, at this point in the election, Obama was behind. Well, it doesn't matter. The wind has been taken out of their sails and they are quitting. They're taking their ball and they're going home. And now they're just online complaining about how, you know, life isn't fair. And it's kind of funny to see the difference in reaction, because when Trump was running, well, I guess it is a little bit different because of the delegate counts. But when Trump was running, you saw them fighting tooth and nail. And even when Trump got on that one debate stage and everyone was booing everything he said, you know, it just made his base angrier. Of course, Trump called everyone out, and Trump said, you know, they stocked this room with donors and their friends. And of course, the room booed him. But people at home got to thinking, oh, maybe that's true. And, you know, Trump would call out the people who are doing him wrong. Bernie Sanders not only doesn't call him out, they're smearing Bernie Sanders as being a Russian agent. And Bernie Sanders, instead of denouncing the Russian narrative and saying, look, this was proved already, not only is Trump not a Russian agent, but the Russians spent it ended up being like a few thousand dollars on Facebook ads for troll farms that wouldn't have swung the election anyway. And a bunch of those ads went to Hillary Clinton, too. They never tell you that. So instead of debunking it, Sanders used that to his political advantage, saying, oh, the Russians love Trump. But now that he's getting smeared with that, he's screwed. He's painted himself into a corner and can't say that that narrative was BS because he was spreading the BS. So that's great. Now, everyone expects Sanders to destroy Biden in the debate on Sunday. But I'll tell you what, one-on-one, Joe is pretty good. So we'll see what happens. I don't think Biden's going to do that badly. But that's what everybody expects. Now, they are closing polling in a lot of these areas because of the coronavirus. So if these votes get delayed because the polls are closed, well, that is going to help the person who wins the debate on Sunday. And if Sanders wins the debate, that might help him out because of those delays. If I was Biden, I would want those polls open.